Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
This episode of the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch is filled with little gems of knowledge, of stories you've probably never heard of before from the gridiron, and they're all coming up in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from the Pigpen in Western Pennsylvania to bring you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome to the football history headlines for this March 7th of the gridiron season, the gridiron off season, that is. Well, we have some great stories for you today, but the very first one we're going to come up to, it sort of takes you to remind you when you were a youngster and you were in high school and you really didn't know what you wanted to do with your life. You know, when you were a kid, you wanted to be maybe an astronaut or a fireman or a policeman. Then you change your mind about 15 times and you end up getting into the career that you are now. It's probably totally different than you were when you were a youngster. Well, our first story has a great message for those kind of kids and are indecisive of what they want to do, and the influence of somebody significant in their life and how they could guide them. So let's get right into it. It's a birthday, March 7th, 1943, Portland, Oregon. The two-way player and guard and linebacker from the University of Washington from 1962 to 1964, Rick Redmond, arrived into this life. An interesting little tidbit from the University of Washington's Tyee Club website was that Redmond, as a youth, had his heart set on attending a different school altogether. The Tyee Club's website story says this: 12-year-old Rick Redmond committed his heart to playing football at Notre Dame on the day his father died, the same day the pair had watched his dad's beloved Fighting Irish on television. 6 years later, he followed his head to the UW for business degree and one of the most successful football careers in school history. When Rick graduated from Seattle's Bishop Blanchett High School in 1961, he'd already planned to accept Notre Dame's scholarship offer. His then-stepfather, John Salen, founder of the Salen Construction, asked him to reconsider and consider Washington and all the relationships and connections he could make for his future if he stayed there. I'd been to games and practices, and I'd been recruited by the Huskies, but I'd never been on the upper campus. I don't know anything about the school, Rick explains. One phone call to the coach and one campus tour later, Rick became a Husky, an intriguing path indeed to the Husky program, but one that everyone in great northwestern corner of the U.S. is glad that he traveled. One of Rick's strongest gridiron attributes was his versatility. He was a great blocker, but he also had the mobility and range to play linebacker, and he took on a chore of punting for his team, according to the NFF. His junior season of 1963 opened up with some adversity as Washington opened the season with three straight losses. The resolve of the team and Redmond then appeared as the team turned their fortunes around and rattled off six wins in their last seven games, taking the conference title and even earning a trip to the Rose Bowl. Redmond was named to the All-Conference as a guard three different times, an All-American guard twice, and an academic All-American once. The National Football Foundation panel of experts selected Rick Redmond's collegiate career worthy of display at the College Football Hall of Fame in 1995. Rick then followed his college career with nine seasons with the San Diego Chargers in the NFL. After hanging up his helmet for the last time, he took over his stepfather's construction business using those UW contacts and connections that were promised to him by his stepfather so long ago. Wow, that is a great story of a whole cycle of life there that happened to this young man. Got to play his gridiron dreams, National Football League, you know, collegiately, locally, in Washington. Didn't get to play for Notre Dame as he dreamed of, as his father had wished, but Wow, just came full circle as a stepfather promised and had a great career in construction there in the Seattle area. Oh, we have more birthdays on this March 7th of Hall of Famers. And the next one took place March 7th, 1950, Baltimore, Maryland. Tom Gatewood, the brilliant wide receiver for the University of Notre Dame football program from 1969 to 1971, celebrated his day of birth. The NFF tells us that Gatewood was the first African-American captain in Notre Dame's history, and this player set almost every receiving record in the school during an All-American career. Earning the consensus first-team All-American in 1970, Tom was the leader of the receivings for Notre Dame in all three seasons of his collegiate career. Gatewood didn't establish just one, but owned multiple Irish receiving records for more than 30 years. These Irish gridiron milestones included a single season of 77 catches and 157 career receptions. Single season yardage marks was 1,123 and a career yardage of 2,283 receiving yards and a career receiving touchdowns with a solid 21 times crossing the goal line. The door swung open for Tom Gatewood as he carried his collegiate legacy into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2015. Tom was taken in the fifth round in the 1972 NFL Draft by the New York Giants and spent two seasons in the Big Apple with this team. After that, he went on to serve as a director and stage manager for ABC News and ABC Sports, receiving both an Emmy and the Peabody Award for his great work. Another success story coming out of the gridiron from college players. Great to hear that. March 7th, 1950, Fort Dix, New Jersey. The 6'2", 230-pound fullback from the early 1970s Penn State Nittany Lions, Franco Harris, was born. At Penn State, he was not considered the future back as he sat in the shadows of Lydell Mitchell. The Steelers didn't see it that way, though, as they used their first-round pick in the 1972 NFL Draft to select Harris. It was a great move because just a few years later, Harris ran for 158 yards against a very good Minnesota Vikings defensive front in Super Bowl IX to earn the MVP honors for the big game. Franco enjoyed a 13-year NFL career where he played with the Seahawks in addition to the Steelers, pounding out 12,120 yards on the ground with 91 touchdowns for his career and an additional 1,227 yards receiving with another 9 scores. All in all, he produced 14,622 total yards of offense and 1,556 postseason yards. The biggest play of his career, though, was his shoestring grab of a deflected pass for a score known as the Immaculate Reception to help to be the defining moment when the Pittsburgh franchise turned the corner to become winners. In 1990, Franco Harris posed for his bronze bust and tried on his gold jacket as he was enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. Well, that's a great segue, because if you like that Steeler story like I do, you're really going to like this one, because we have two Steeler Hall of Famers that were born on March 7th. Next one was born in 1952 on that day, Alcoa, Tennessee. The graceful pass-catching wideout of the USC Trojans in the early 1970s, Lynn Swann, arrived into this world. Lynn was a Swiss Army knife of sorts for the Trojans, as his head coach, John McKay, asked him not only to catch passes, but to take on punt return duties, block, and even run the ball on occasion. Swann performed well at all of them. For his college career, Lynn turned in 48-yard punt returns and had long gains of 92 yards, 73, 57, 54, and 50 yards. Swann carried the ball 25 times for a 7.9-yard average in college, and in 1972, the Chattanooga Times selected Swann to their All-America Blockers team. He was selected to the All-American team as a receiver in 1973, with probably his signature play of his collegiate career being a high-leaping, stretched-out grab of a pass in the 1973 Stanford game. Coach McKay commented, "He has all the speed, soft hands, and grace. We ask Lynn to do many things, and he excels in all." The National Football Foundation voters voted to preserve the USC football legacy of Lynn Swann in College Football Hall of Fame in 1993. The Pittsburgh Steelers wasted no time in the 1974 NFL draft of taking Lynn in the first round. He made an immediate impact on the success of the franchise as a rookie caught the AFC Championship game-winning touchdown pass to propel Pittsburgh to its very first Super Bowl appearance per the Pro Football Hall of Fame's website. In just his second season, he overcame the sophomore jinx and led the NFL with 11 TD receptions and earned a Super Bowl X Most Valuable Player Award for his brilliant performance on the big stage against the Dallas Cowboys. He made many more highlight reel catches in his 9-year career with the Black and Gold, and he totaled 336 grabs for 5,462 yards and 51 TDs. He was selected as an All-Pro in 3 different years. And oh, did I mention he collected 4 Super Bowl rings in those 9 years? The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined Lynn Swann in 2001's induction ceremony. March 7, 1955, San Antonio, Texas. Rice University's stellar quarterback from 1973 to 1976, Tommy Kramer, was born. Kramer led the nation with 3,317 passing yards and 3,272 yards of total offense in 1976. Both milestones gave him the honor of ranking second in the NCAA single-season history at the time. The NFF's bio of Kramer gives him the distinction of being one of only 2 quarterbacks in college football history to earn consensus All-America honors for a team with a losing record. That's something to say there. Also, in that 1976 senior season of his, Tommy registered 5th in the Heisman Trophy voting and was selected as a consensus All-American that year. The NFF voters chose Tommy Kramer to be part of the 2012 College Football Hall of Fame induction class and preserve his football legacy. He was chosen by the Minnesota Vikings in the first round of the 1977 NFL Draft, and Kramer compiled nearly 25,000 career passing yards, 159 touchdowns during his 14 NFL seasons. In 1986, he was picked as the NFL's Comeback Player of the Year and earned his only spot on the NFC Pro Bowl squad in his career. Wow, that's a great story there, too, that Tommy Kramer. Great collegian and a pretty good quarterback in the NFL, too. And we remember them all. So there's our legends that have birthdays today. We remember them all. You can see them at the College Football Hall of Fame, which is now located in Atlanta, or some of the other ones you can see in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, or guys like Lynn Swann. You can find them in both because that's just the way he rolls. So we're glad you could join us today. You are so special to us, and we can't thank you enough for being with us here each and every day on the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch podcast, because we want that football history to be shared, and there's no better way to share it than to have some listeners to listen to it. So if you know anybody else that wants to listen to it, please get them in here. If you are listening on a podcast provider, hit that subscribe button or that follow button to make sure that every single time we drop a new release, which is every single night at midnight, and sometimes we do it twice in a day. We have 2 different podcasts in a day, like we are today, because it's going to be special today. You are going to get a bonus edition of the greatest NFL players that wore the number 13. We're going to come up with a list of the top players and discuss many of them that wore number 13. So we want you to make sure you catch that and participate. And you can participate in this one if you see something or that you found interesting, or maybe something you want to correct. Well, email us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. You can find all of our podcast episodes on the sportshistorynetwork.com, along with many other podcasts of sports history with some great hosts and guests that they have, with some topics that are all over the globe now. Just a great worldwide sports history that Arnie Chapman's got going on at the Sports History Network, and we're very proud of what's going on there. You can go to our flagship website, pigskindispatch.com, and you can see all the articles that we post. We have a lot of football knowledge here. Use our powerful Earl to Go search box engine, and you can look up almost anything you want to in the game of gridiron of college and professional sports, and any players that are in there. We're adding to it every single day. If you see something we're missing, again, email us, pigskindispatch@gmail.com. And until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.